One of Ireland's most beloved writers will be appearing in Aotearoa next week. Claire Keegan, author of Small Things Like These, is going to be at Wanaka's Festival of Colour, talking about why Irish writers are making a big impact. It's the story, Small Things Like These, of a coal merchant whose eyes are opened to the horror of the laundry run by nuns. One Christmas time, it became an international bestseller and was shortlisted for the Booker Prize. Since then, she's also written more, including So Late in the Day. And Claire Keegan is with us now from her home in Ireland. Kia ora, how are you? Thanks for being with us.
It's lovely to be with you. Thank you for inviting me.
I think you've been mucking out your horses. Is that right? Just before you came in to talk to us?
Oh, goodness. I didn't mean for that to be broadcast, but yes.
Tell me That's about your horses.
Oh, well, I've been working with, I've been studying with an Australian trainer from Queensland for about 10 years now, and I'm going down to Brisbane, to the Brisbane Valley next month to work with him again. We've got 10 trainers training 10 Brumbies in 12 days. So it's just wonderful to be a part of that.
You grew up on a farm. Have horses always been part of your life?
They have, yes. I've always loved horses and books. And now my books pay for my horses. Not that I make a penny out of my horses, so I can't complain.
Oh, well, thank you for letting us know about the horses. I always love knowing what people are doing before they sort of pop in and we get that window of time with them. Because, of course, you're joining us by Zoom. You're going to be at the Festival of Colour down in Wanaka, but I think this is virtually you're going to be appearing down there.
Yes. Unfortunately, I won't be there in person, but I will be there in spirit and gladly so.
And talking about Irish storytelling, Irish storytelling certainly is very famous. Part of my family's Irish, and certainly that's a tradition that I grew up with as well. Being a writer, though, do you see a split between the storytelling, the oral storytelling, and the written word for Ireland?
Well, I can't speak for Ireland, but I can speak for myself. And I think there's a huge difference between telling a story orally and writing a story. I'm not sure that there's too much of an overlap at all. I actually think that stories don't want to be written. I think short stories, especially, are told with varying degrees of reluctance. It's almost like, you know, if you have you ever been to a wedding, and when it comes time for the speeches to be made, you really hope that the person who wants the microphone doesn't get the microphone. Well, in a way, storytelling is sometimes to do with the person who gets the microphone. And the short story is actually given to the person who doesn't want the microphone, which is one of the reasons why short stories are short.
Mm.
Have an unwilling narrator.
Did you set out to have a certain economy in the language that you write?
No, not at all. I just would love for my work to be as long as it needs to be. And if I thought Small Things Like These needed to be 500 pages, I very much hope that's what I would have given it. But I don't think most stories need to be that long. Chekhov wrote a wonderful letter to his brother Alexander, and Alexander was trying to write, and Anton wrote to him and said, grace is when you make the least number of movements between two points. And I read that and I thought, how beautiful that you just leave as much as you can out of it and not be indulgent and to be light and graceful and light-handed. And he had this huge and athletic imagination to go with it. So it's just what I'm drawn to.
How do you hone down those sentences because sometimes they require a second read to get more of that detail blooming forth from them.
I suppose I try to write a book that I'd like to read. And people always ask me about how do I get them down to what they are. And I don't know that I see any down in it. And I don't condense language because language cannot be condensed. You either put it in or you take it out or you leave it out. It's that simple. But I do go through at least 30 drafts, and I just try to leave it as something that I would like to read, and to engage the reader's intelligence rather than explaining what's going on in the text, just to leave as much as possible that's open and yet to be clear and not cryptic.
30 drafts sounds like quite a process to go through.
Oh, it's not. I think that's
Is it
normal.
not?
No, I don't think so. I don't think that's much at all. Flannery O'Connor did 30 drafts, and maybe I should be doing 60. Maybe the rest of us should be doing at least 60. No, I don't think that's much. I think to do anything well and to have to go over it 30 times is realistic.
Where do the ideas for your stories come from?
I really don't know. If I could find where that is, I'd just kind of have a signpost for myself and go there. You know, there's a writer in the States called Bob Butler, and he said stories don't come from ideas. They come from the white hot center of you, from the place where you dream.
It's a rather lovely way of looking at it.
Well, it's not from your head so much as from your belly button. It comes out of it, it's not really about ideas. I don't know that stories are about ideas. All children can tell stories. They know innately what a story is. They know that the cat sat on a mat is not a story, and the cat sat on the dog's mat is a story. They just know all of that, and it's very, very clear and plain and playful and innate in children. And then we go to school, and something happens, and we're driven up into our heads and want to give right answers. But that isn't the place where stories come from, I don't think.
Do people find it hard? Do you find it hard to connect with your belly button, if you like, to connect with that white hot centre?
Well, I don't at all. I think it's a normal thing. I don't. I kept my playfulness and my childishness, and I'm just delighted that I haven't been jaded by the world to the extent where I can't find play in the language. I'm just delighted that I've been able to maintain that. And I did very badly in secondary school, which may have been very helpful to me. I just didn't go through that. I stayed out of it and disliked it intensely, having been a wonderful student before and after then. But I think that part of me just didn't get knocked out or wouldn't. I didn't, for some reason, allow myself to go there daily and let that be knocked out of me. And it wasn't a good school. No, I just think it's a normal thing to keep your storytelling and your comedy as well.
You left Ireland to study. Was that in part because of your experience at high school?
Oh, I'd say it was, yeah, but it wasn't just high school. I mean, the secondary school was part of the fabric of Irish society at that time, which really was backward and parochial. Marital rape was legal here until 1990. Contraception was illegal until 1985. That's the society I grew up in, and there were a lot of unwanted children. So I really just felt that I needed to go away somewhere and to see if things were different elsewhere, or better elsewhere, or worse elsewhere. And the natural inclination for us at that time in Ireland was everybody was looking across the Atlantic towards the United States. That's where the films were coming from, that's where the music was coming from, and that's where people had always gone from Ireland from the time of the famine and before.
What did you find?
Oh, I found another parochial place in New Orleans with a horrible climate, pretty much, and lots of racism and misogyny. So that was interesting and a shock. But I also found a very good number of teachers at Loyola University in New Orleans, and I became a student again. And that was enriching and joyous and a privilege. But I can't say it's a place I'd want to live. It's still listed as one of the most dangerous cities in the world.
Listening to Saturday Morning on RNZ National, my guest is Claire Keegan, author of Small Things Like These, and she'll be appearing at the Festival of Colour in Wanaka by Zoom next week. I'm interested that you talk about the misogyny and drawing to some extent those two things together, the misogyny and the racism that you saw and you experienced in New Orleans, and also the situation in Ireland when you were growing up. Is that one of the white hot things that lives inside you and drives you to tell stories?
I really don't know that I'm driven to tell stories. I don't tell stories so much as write them. And I think maybe we write because for some reason have to. And I don't know what that reason is. It's probably really a desire to make something that's aesthetically pleasing. You see something that's beautiful, and I'm a good reader. You see something that's beautiful and you want to give it a go. You wonder if you could make one of those. And that's where the stories come from, the desire to make something beautiful.
A lot has changed in Ireland over the time that you grew up. You mentioned marital rape, you mentioned lots of unwanted children, contraception hard to access. And with that does come the spectre of the laundries, which appear in small things like these, but not perhaps in a straightforward manner.
Well, should stories be told in a straightforward manner? Has any good story ever been told in a straightforward manner?
What is the scar that is left by the laundry still?
Everything you can think of. Everything you can think of. Children who don't know who their fathers were, women whose parents abandoned them and left them in institutions where nobody cared for them. They had no money, they were enslaved, their babies were taken away and sold, never to be seen again for some. And then a state which actually denied that any of that happened for decades. I don't know how you can measure that, or I certainly wouldn't attempt to. I think it's just immeasurable, the hurt.
And of course, it is one of the reverberations, I suppose, in small things like these. Not just the laundries featuring, but also the central character not knowing his father. That exploration is... It's certainly quite... At times it's quite... It feels quite difficult to write. You can, you know, you can... To read, rather, you can sort of feel it coming off the page at you.
Well, thank you. I don't think it should come off the page easily. If that was the case, I think I would have failed in my grace. As I said, I think stories are told with varying degrees of reluctance. And you know, stories are about pain, about human upset. You know, it's the internal logic, the bonds we make, the binds, the no going back, and life sensualities and what we carry and can and cannot bear as life goes on and how this changes. And I think for Bill Furlong, he's just gone through a crisis and doesn't know where his life is leading him, and yet he wants to honour what he's chosen.
Ireland now, a lot of change has happened in a relatively short space of time. And of course, it is Good Friday with you, which always puts in mind the Good Friday Agreement. How do you view the changes that you've seen in your home country over the last few decades?
Well, I'm very pleased about how it's changed. I hope it's not superficial. I don't know that the attitudes towards women have changed as much as they seem to have. Like on a daily basis, I'm just not quite sure of that. I'm not convinced by the language that women are treated as equals. I don't think it happens that quickly. But I'm also delighted by the prospect and the promise of things getting better. Having said that, I look like at somebody like Donald Trump and his misogyny and wonder how he could have become the president of the United States and how he's being yet again considered for that role with his obvious, very obvious misogyny and racism. It just it worries me I just wonder. I mean, I remember reading biographies when I was in New Orleans of Franklin Delano Roosevelt and Truman, and I studied political science and remember reading those, and I just feel convinced that if they had said the things that Donald Trump is saying now, that the United States would have rejected him as the head of state. They would have said, well, we cannot have somebody like that at the helm. And yet here we go again with somebody who is obviously, to me, unsuitable, being considered yet again as head of state. It's it just makes me worry that there's a new type of misogyny which women support also.
Mm. Yes, it's an interesting one to observe that misogyny doesn't always come from men, but is often enabled and often supercharged by women.
Yes, it's frightening. That frightens me. And there was there was so much misogyny in the Irish convents here with the nuns, and the nuns ran the Magdalene laundries here also, which didn't close down until the 90s, and that really isn't long ago.
That was one of the things I found with small things like these, that it was set in the 1980s, but in some ways it felt to me like it could have been set 100 years earlier.
Yeah.
In that sense that these sort of unthinkable scenarios were still being perpetuated as late as that.
Yes, I would have hoped that maybe the opposite was true, that it was it's being so recent was what struck you, rather than it could have been something that was 100 years ago that was what struck you. But yes, not a great deal. You're right, not a great deal had changed during that time.
You're now on the school syllabus, something to be studied. How do you feel about that, considering your relationship with school when you were there?
Oh, I just think it's wonderful. And it's lovely to meet the students. And it's lovely. I went into a school last month in my own home county here. I went into a girls' school. And it was just absolutely delightful to see all these young girls coming in to school. And they were so different to how we were. We were going into school with our heads down and afraid. And there really was no joy in it. And to see them all and to feel their humor and their energy and their delight in study and stories. And they asked me to kind of go in and launch their book corner, because they'd made this wonderful corner for books where all these girls can go whenever they like during, off class time, and go in and sit and read. And they had this whole library and this book nook. And I just thought, oh, how wonderful that things have changed in this way. And isn't it lovely to be a part of this? Really, it's delightful. And it also people, students read and teenagers read in a different way and ask you different questions. And it's so unpretentious. And it crosses all the classes. Sometimes reading and book clubs, it's a middle class thing. And with schools, it isn't. It crosses that. So that really is delightful. Like, I couldn't be more pleased.
For many people, the idea of schoolgirls in Ireland will bring to mind the TV show Derry Girls.
Yes, I'm sorry, I don't watch television, so I've heard of it, but I just don't watch TV. I don't have time in my life to watch television. I watch other people's televisions. I go to my brother's house and he watches television, so I sit and watch whatever he's watching, and it doesn't draw me to watch more television.
And small things like these is going to be made into a film, and perhaps it maybe is already made into a film, and coming up for release with Cillian Murphy, now Oscar winner, of course, as part of it. Will you watch that?
I don't know that I will. It already has been made, and it opened the Berlin Film Festival. It was the first Irish film to ever open the Berlin Film Festival, and I think it may be coming out in November, but I'm not sure. I don't know if I'll watch it. I'm just delighted for him and his success, and hope it does very well for them.
Well, thank you very much for your time. And of course, fantastic to hear of all of your success. Claire Keegan there, who's with us on Saturday morning, author of Small Things Like These, amongst other things. And she's going to be at the Festival of Colour in Wanaka, talking about Irish writers making a big impact.